This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We got news, entertainment, interviews, and so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, Facebook comes to town. We hear from author Jilly McMillan about her latest novel, and we hear from the author of a new children's book about sharecropping. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Thursday, September 20th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Facebook was in town this week, and they were right here in the East Center on JSU's campus. They were on a 34-city tour trying to reach out to small business owners about their services and to try to create more services for small business owners and get feedback from them. And I spoke about the project or the tour with Facebook's Communications Manager for Policy Programs, Emmanuel Avita.
Why are you here in Jackson, Mississippi today?
Love Jackson, Mississippi. We're currently on our 34th. This is our 34th city of 50 cities we're visiting across the U.S., providing small business training to help small businesses grow and people gain some of the digital skills they need to compete in the digital economy. We've pledged to train 1 million people and small business owners by 2020, and Jackson is part of that pledge. We've also done some surveys and some studies around small business needs. And we discovered that 70% of Jackson small business owners who are on Facebook believe that digital skills and social media marketing is an important factor to consider when they're hiring people. So Jackson small businesses feel that this is important, and we want to provide the training for them to help with that.
Most people think they know social media. You know, I know how to get on there, like somebody's host. But there's a lot more to it if you really want to use it, especially for a business. So what can you offer people in terms of the more advanced techniques to navigate Facebook?
Sure. You know, the digital ecosystem is evolving and changing quite rapidly. And you're right. A lot of people feel, or some people feel, comfortable when representing themselves on social media. And I think that here and during this training and some of the resources we will provide will help small businesses, whether they're beginners or a little bit more advanced, as to how to position themselves. I mean, some questions we get, for example, is how often does one post? How do you engage an audience so that they can keep coming back? Or how much video should you use? How produced should images be when you post them? And the questions that some people might find easy, but other people might not have that knowledge. And so we want to make sure that a broad variety of businesses know how to use social media in a strategic way to reach audiences, engage audiences, grow audiences here in Jackson, in greater Mississippi, and beyond.
it's an advanced terrain on there now. The algorithms, all the things you guys have to be able to measure the impact of somebody's post or what they're doing. Talk about the advances that you guys are making in terms of reaching out to other people on the site.
You know, I think that there are a couple of things that are very interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, there are ways to integrate an interaction with your customer that people may not have thought of. So, for example, if you go to a Facebook business page right now, there's a way that you can integrate Messenger into it so that as someone that who's looking for your page can reach out directly to you or contact you directly. I think the challenge there is to already incorporate a strategy within your business planning so that you know what to do when you start getting all of that input from businesses or from people. When your customers actually find you and they want to know how to engage with you or they want that response. And I think that really there are some very basic thoughts that a small business owner needs to take into account when they really think about what are they going to do once they start getting that audience. Ultimately, I'll also mention that any business is about people and the customer. You'd be surprised how many businesses don't have basic information on their site, their address, updated hours, updated phone contact, or businesses that might change their strategy for engaging. So, you know, let's say they have a campaign on, you know, Social Thursdays, for example, and they'll start to post, and then after some time they stop. And then sometimes they'll feel guilty and then start posting quite a bit, and then they'll stop, and they wonder why they have trouble with an audience. It's because they have to, once they set an expectation, they should keep it. We talk about photos and video, and that may be fairly simple, but people love to engage with images and video, and they don't have to be overproduced. So, for example, I remember a small business who said that, you know, when she wanted to show off her spa, she hired someone to take professional photos. And when she talked to some of the people around in her neighborhood, they said, oh, is that real? They didn't feel that the overproduced photos represented really something in their community. So when she started taking photos with her iPhone, showing some of the background and some of the behind the scenes, she started to get an overwhelming audience. So there's some of these insights that folks get here at the training. I'd recommend that anyone that wants to know a little bit more, maybe they're not able to come to the training, go to Facebook Blueprint. These are tools that we provide online, and they can just search for Facebook Blueprint. And this will give kind of a collection of resources and lessons for people to take their training to the next level.
The final thing I want to ask you is, you say you've been traveling around the country, and Facebook kind of is a global community. With targeting businesses in different parts of the country, is there any localization to it, or is it just that you're trying to reach out to the whole global community?
We realize, and I think it's been said, that small businesses, like the health and the strength of a small business, represents the health and the strength of the local community. So we're not only calling small business owners, but community leaders, community managers, nonprofits, and depending on the city that we go to, sometimes we will add additional content that's relevant to that city. So, for example, in Houston, a lot of people were still recovering from recent hurricane. And in Houston, they were still talking about, I believe it was Hurricane Maria, while much of the other country maybe had forgotten that businesses were still recovering. So we had some content for businesses who were recovering from Hurricane Maria. And we also, I believe, gave some training to some nonprofits that were supporting businesses that were recovering. And so we provide content where it makes sense that's very specific to needs of the particular community. And we try to do that because we wanted to make this relevant. In Jackson, we know that Jackson has a strong African-American community, a lot of strong African-American business owners, entrepreneurs, or people that are interested in becoming business owners and entrepreneurs. And what we learned.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, author Jilly McMillan. Stick around.
Support of this program is made in part by... From sore throats and fevers to annual wellness visits and more specialized care, Merit Health Medical Group has you covered with more than 30 primary care and specialty practices across the Jackson and Vicksburg metropolitan areas. Merit Health Medical Group providers offer care with your schedule in mind. Walk-ins are welcome at all primary care practices. Same-day or next-day appointments are available at 844-MS-MERIT. That's 844-MS-MERIT, because there's merit in convenient care.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Author Jilly McMillan releases her latest novel this week. I Know You Know is the name of the book, and I spoke with the author earlier today about her fourth novel, which is getting good reviews. I want to start by asking you to describe I Know You Know to our listeners.
I Know You Know is the story of Cody Swift. He's a filmmaker. He's in his 30s, and he returns to his hometown of Bristol in the UK because he wants to look into the murders of his two best friends. They were killed when they were 11 years old. Somebody went to jail for the crime, but Cody and others suspect that he was jailed wrongly and that somebody else was responsible. What Cody really wants to do is start a podcast to record what he finds. And, of course, this is not popular with some of the people back in Bristol, particularly the original investigator on the case and also the mother of one of the victims. She has some things she would rather not come back out into the open.
This is your fourth novel, and clearly for me as a reader, a theme is emerging here in your work. Is that intentional on your part?
What's the theme?
Well, the theme for me definitely involves children and some of the experiences they go through that shape them, and mm-hmm. then the books are centered around that theme.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Children and family, wider family as well, are really interesting to me, and I'm very interested in how the things that... Not just the things we do, but the things that happen to us. I'm interested in how those things affect the way we live and the decisions we make, and also our own kind of family and friends. I think things can stay with us for years, and kind of some things kind of run in your blood for a long time after they've happened, and that fascinates me. And I do love to explore that. It's sort of what I would call regular lives, which have been struck by a bolt of lightning in some way.
Is that the case with you, that there's a specific experience like that in your life?
Certainly, one of my children had a cancer diagnosis as a baby. He's well now. We were very fortunate. You wouldn't know he'd ever been unwell, but that was a really shocking experience, and it stayed with us. And, yeah, I think it shapes me every single day, and we're now, 11, 12 years on from his diagnosis.
Did that experience change the way you look at children and what they go through? Because I think for many folks, when they think of children or in the past have thought of children, it was an idealized way, and that was a ideal time of life, playing and cavorting with other friends. And really, it's a lot more complicated than that for today's children.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and it absolutely made me think of children differently, particularly because of how my son's illness affected my other children. And it made me understand better, how much some children have to learn and cope with at a very young age. And there are many kids out there who have some tough stuff to deal with. And it makes me think, it makes me more empathetic, more sympathetic, and I think it's something we need to address as a society, and address it sort of quickly and carefully, actually.
Do you think it's accurate, Jilly, to describe your novels as thrillers?
I think they're thrillers, and I think they're family dramas as well, and crime dramas too. I think they're a bit of a mix.
And I guess the reason I ask is because they are thrillers, but they are so character-driven, and the characters are so multidimensional that they seem different than some other thrillers.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's certainly a goal of mine when I'm writing. I care very much that the characters are real and that the reader can imagine themselves meeting the characters and wondering what it would be like to interact with them. I think it's a huge role of fiction to allow us to get into the heads of other people, and that's what I try and do when I write.
Well, I certainly, as a reader, get that when I'm reading the novels. And clearly, to me, the other thing that I thought when this book came out is, boy, Jilly McMillan is prolific. Is it about a book? Is it about a novel a year?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, that's the recommended, and I try and stick to that. It's hard work, but you know, I don't mind hard work.
So for those other writers out there, tell me a little bit about your rhythm. So you finish a book, and then how long before you start the next book, or are you already thinking about the next book before you finish the last one?
In an ideal world, you already have some idea of what you're going to do because it can kind of percolate at the back of your head, and that's really useful. It just helps bring a bit of depth to it when you start it. So, yeah, you want to be cracking on pretty quickly. You kind of snatch a week off here and there between edits and that sort of thing. But I'm nervous if I take too much time off. I worry that I'll rush the next book, so I prefer to start it quickly and give myself time to develop it.
Well, you've got a rhythm going, that's for sure. You know, the other thing I want to ask you, Jilly, is the novels are intense. And I wonder what kind of feedback you get from your own family.
My kids haven't read all my novels. They've read two of them. They have their favorites, and I think that's very much to do with their personalities. My 14-year-old gives me very firm editorial advice. He doesn't hold back. and the rest of my family, they're very supportive. It's very nice that they're proud of the books and they're supportive, and that's a lovely thing.
And I guess I want to ask you before we go, are you satisfied with the direction that your career is taking? Because clearly, in my mind anyway, your writing has gotten better as you've gone along. Not that it was ever bad, but I think you're even more compelling as a storyteller and in drawing these characters. Are you satisfied with your trajectory?
I am, and thank you for the kind words. Yeah, that's what I'm pushing myself to do is get better and produce books that are richer and stronger and sort of swifter moving. And, yeah, I very much want to improve with each novel.
Well, Jilly McMillan, it is always a pleasure speaking with you. I Know You Know is your latest, and I hope it does very well.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak to you as well.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, the author of the new book, White Gold Cotton, The Sharecropper Stories. Stick around.
The weathercasts on WJSU are underwritten by Ingalls Shipbuilding in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Ingalls is an equal opportunity employer, hiring electricians, machinists, ship fitters, pipe fitters, and pipe welders. Positions are union represented. Information at 888-935-1507 or the Ingalls website at huntingtoningalls.com/careers.
Cool and Current WJSU wants to hear from you. While we do our best to provide you with great quality jazz and blues programming, we realize that things can change. We want to change with you so that you don't change the station. We're all ears. Have a programming suggestion or request? Any likes or dislikes? Emails can be sent to wjsufm@jsums.edu. That's wjsufm@jsums.edu.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Artist and now author Charles Watkins has written a book for young people called White Gold Cotton, The Sharecropper Stories. And earlier today, I got to sit down with author and JSU alum, Charles Watkins III. So, Charles, tell us about the book.
My book is pertaining to the history of the sharecropper. And you, as you know, sharecropping started right after slavery. The Union Army took over the land from the rebels. So all the slaves became refugees because they had been released from slavery. And that's why sharecropping got started.
There's a lot of debate about was it fair, and that's how people earned a living, you know, but they didn't own the land. They were sharecropping for the landowners. What can you tell us about it personally? Did you have relatives that were sharecroppers?
I have to tell you this right here, Dwayne. I lived on a plantation with my grandparents from the age of 7 to 15, and that was an experience that I wanted to share with my children. So I did some research. In my research that I discovered, sharecropping was a form of industrial. This was a part of the Southern industrial. And the slaves had been conditioned. They didn't have any other way of thinking, of knowing what was going on. But it was a good time for them to have independence. But once the Union soldiers started winning the Civil War, then what happened? They became refugees and they became lost and they crowded around the Union armies. One thing I really want to bring out to let people know, General Sherman came up with an idea. We're going to give these refugees that's hanging around 40 acres and a mule. The Union Army had recovered all these mules and horses that were carrying the supplies from the rebel armies and everything, and they gave them to the slaves. But it wasn't ratified. They were squatters. And after the Civil War, they came in and did a reconstruction. They gave, after the Civil War, they gave everybody their freedom, all the slaves their freedom, and everything was involved. The legislation was almost completely African-Americans. The African-American gave it up. So the 40 acres and a mule, it's a myth, and it was never ratified.
Right, they never really got that 40 acres and a mule.
It was something that General Sherman Williams came up with himself.
When you sat down to write the book, though, you said you did it for your children. How aware were they of this period in time?
This was totally a period of time that I was not aware of. So it woke me up learning about that. But let's fast forward real quick for you can understand. I don't want to get caught right here. A lot of the people that came back to the plantation, they didn't have any money, and they started drawing up contracts for people that could not read. And what happened, they drew up a contract to favor the landowners. And a lot of those landowners were not fair. And what they did, they took advantage of the people that could not understand, that could write X.
So let's move ahead then to the period of the book that you cover. And when you wrote this book, how aware were your children of this period of time, the time when you were down here living with your grandparents?
They absolutely had no knowledge of what was going on. And actually, we become a product of our past. I had a problem letting them know, to understand why they didn't react a certain way, why they didn't want to take advantage of certain opportunities.
And it's interesting because that, for a lot of young people, they don't really know a lot about our history. And for your children, this was really, literally, their history that you were talking about.
It's history forever for my family. It's a backbone of history. But not only the backbone for my history, it's a backbone for all the sharecroppers.
Right.
Because it's a history that tells their story about how they sacrificed, working 12 hours and 14 hours a day in fields, hoping to sacrificing themselves for the next generation to move forward.
And not only people in the South, for many folks anyway, they migrated from the South. We know about the Great Migration. So
right.
This is a story that affects black folks all over the country.
All over the country. People in Philadelphia never heard of sharecroppers. I got a friend, he's a president of a university. He didn't know of sharecropping. People from the South did not migrate to Massachusetts, Philadelphia. They migrated to Chicago, where just fortunately, the Industrial Revolution was getting ready to take place. Ford Motor Company, steel mills, construction, transportation of all levels, housing. It was a complete migration explosion.
Right. I did a show about the Great Migration, and I was talking to the woman at that time who was the president of the Chicago Urban League, and she said that between 1950 and 1920, when they first started, their whole reason for starting was to greet people coming from Mississippi off of the trains.
It was two sets of refugees, refugees after the Civil War, and then another explosion back in 1930. That generation from slavery was getting ready to make another generation. In other words, that generation was dying off. And the new generation was learning about the Industrial Revolution because it was coming up here to learn about other things, from $2 a day to $20 a day, or $1 a day.
Which is a huge difference at that time.
Change of life.
Yeah. So in the book, there is some fantastic artwork. And for listeners, the other part of this, beside just the book, is that there's going to be an art exhibit called the Sharecropper's Stories Art Exhibit.
Right.
Talk to me about the art. Who did it?
I created the art. The art was a spiritual revolution to me. I could always draw, but I never had painted. So this is my first experience painting. My uncle, he's not with us now. He indicated, if you're interested in something, the Holy Spirit would teach you. So I was taught by the Holy Spirit along with what I already knew. 18 chapters, I have 23 collective items, paintings that's involved in it. Acrylic on heavy canvas, cotton canvas.
And how did you settle on acrylic as opposed to oil or watercolors?
Well, when I first started painting, I wasn't familiar with all the different phases of painting. And acrylic seemed to be the painting. It dries quick. It seemed to be easy to work with. It seemed to be something that I can get immediate satisfaction from. And it seemed to be something that you can use a lot of layers. So my painting is basically a tremendous amount of layers, a tremendous amount of time, and just an emotional type of painting.
The paintings are colorful and very expressive, very unique. How long did it take you to develop the style that you settled on?
I really didn't know that I had a style until one of my observers say, you know what? I had about five paintings. She said, I could pick out your paintings anywhere. An artist has the tendency to create all his art the same way. If it's a dog, it's going to be a dog. If it be a cat, it's going to be a cat. A person, they would have the same neck, the same ears, but it'd be a different person. That technique and style that you use is like your handwriting. Nobody can do that like you.
Right. And it's interesting that you said that, you know, you can have an art class and ask them to interpret the same object. You could have 20 people in that class, 20 people, 20 versions of what that object is.
Right. But with my paintings now, I truly have a feeling of it now. I don't have to sweat it. My feelings come out. My creations come out. And what it is, I think, is my book and my artwork is a motivation to people who want to do something.
Well, the name of the book is White Gold Cotton, The Sharecropper Stories, and Charles Watkins is a JSU alum, so I know a lot of you are gonna want to come out and support him. And the exhibit opens today at Johnson Hall, right here on JSU's campus, and it's running through December 8th, but you wanna come to the premiere tonight at 6 o'clock. And the exhibit is called The Sharecropper Stories. And I want to thank you so much, Charles, for sharing these stories from your life. And I know a lot of people are going to want to see the art.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
And I want to thank you for listening today. That's our show. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at 10 on JSU TV, Comcast Channel 14. You can catch their live stream on Facebook. Just type in Jackson State TV. One word. Easy as that. We'll be back Monday with more of the Full Spectrum right here on FM 88.5. You can stream WJSU online at WJSU.org. Up next, Latin Jazz with your host, Dale Morris. Have a great evening.